This is Josh Denny, and you are listening to March of the Pigs. Step right up.
So we just ate at Nate and Al's.
Yeah.
And I've never been there before.
It's my office. You know, I live nearby, and I literally do probably four breakfasts, if there is such a word. And
what is the plural of breakfast?
Breakfast. And I do many lunches there because I can. And yeah. I love the food. I'm on Weight Watchers, so
little plug for those
folks.
Yeah,
I wish they signed me up as a client.
Yeah, right.
And I eat salads there mostly, but you had my favorite, which I haven't had in 6 weeks.
The corned beef. Yeah, so I'm supposed to be doing keto now in between the show, and I was like, I'll have two pieces of rye bread today. I can squeeze it in. I'll go to the gym later.
Yeah, right. Sure you will. It's amazing.
But yeah, it was amazing corned beef. And to me, corned beef is my litmus test for Jewish delis.
Yeah.
Like pastrami is for some people, but I've had some of the best pastrami I've had is not at Jewish delis.
Yeah.
So for me, it's the corned beef, and that was like...
I'm glad you loved it.
It was amazing.
Yeah, I'm glad. You know, so it's ginormous food meets unwrapped here, right?
Yeah, it is. It's like generations of Food Network hosting coming together.
And so I could tell you how the corned beef was made, and then you would look for the biggest sandwich.
I would try to put as much of it as I could on the bread, yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, we just did a Jewish deli, but we didn't do any like corned beef. We did a pastrami, we did a brisket pastrami.
Where was this?
This was in Arizona, in Phoenix.
There are no Jews in Arizona.
But, well, we found the five. they have a chain of these places in Phoenix called
what?
Chompies. And it's like totally New York themed. They have murals of like the Yankees and stuff on the wall.
Those are really reformed Jews who have a place called Chompies. Come on.
Exactly. But it was really good Jewish food. And they make these Jewish sliders, which are brisket pastrami on challah.
That sounds nice.
And
by the way, it's challah.
Okay. Yeah, I just said it fast.
Do it, you know.
Challah. they did the brisket pastrami and... it was good, and they did it on, the big one comes on a whole challah.
Nicely done.
Which is, but it was, the thing that amazed me is so many of these big sandwiches are, like, tough.
Yeah.
The breads are tough to hold everything. It was, like, super soft. It was like a cinnamon roll without cinnamon.
Well, we can discuss sandwiches in Philly and the bread till the cows come home. Now, are you a cheesesteak guy?
Of course. Yeah, do I? What? You can see me,
Forgive
Mark.
Forgive me for asking.
Yeah.
What's your favorite cheesesteak place?
D'Alessandro's.
See, everybody says that. That's interesting.
Is it really a popular
one? I hear that.
Because I hear people always go, here's what I find. People that don't know much about Philly will say Pat's or Geno's.
Right. Well, that's a tourist.
That's the tourist trying to look like they know Philly.
But by the way, Geno's is the cleanest kitchen I have ever been in.
That is true.
You could
Pat's
literally
is the 100% opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know how Pat's stays open from a Board of Health perspective.
Well, there's another place, I don't know if I should start mentioning names here in Philly, that has, what's the sandwich that people eat when it's not
Roast pork.
Yes. I won't mention the place.
You're not talking about John's, are you?
Could be.
Okay, so
that kitchen is frightening.
Anybody? Well, first of all, it's not a kitchen.
No,
it's a trailer. It's a shack. It's a shack that's been turned into a sandwich place.
It's
still the best roast pork in Philly.
Everybody says
but don't you white glove that place because you'll never eat there again.
No. Well, by the way, that's many restaurants.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, when I first went to Philly, it was Jim's. Okay.
Yeah, I like Jim's too. That's kind of like a suburban place. They got a bunch of them in strip malls and stuff.
But Tony Luke's, I particularly like.
So I was about to say, Tony Luke's is the one that people that know Philly but don't want to say Geno's and Pat's usually say.
Yeah. But Tony's a friend. Yeah. But there's another place on Market Street that I can't think of the name of now that has these seated rolls, and it's driving me nuts.
There's a guy who I can't believe isn't hosting a million shows.
Tony?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, he did one show for some other network. I don't know. You know what he has talent-wise that nobody knows? He's an amazing singer.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. If you ever heard Tony Luke sing, your head would explode. You cannot believe that voice came out of that guy.
So next time I go, I'm going to be like, I want a roast pork and a song.
Honest to God, he's the nicest man ever.
He seems like it.
He really is.
Well, he's one of those great stories where he like had a pretty hard life as a young man, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then kind of reformed and found his love of cooking and started opening restaurants. And now I'd argue
globally.
Yeah, I mean, there's Tony Luke's in, like, Japan and stuff,
Dubai,
right?
Dubai, it's crazy. All these guys open restaurants in Dubai. I mean, really?
We were in Vegas filming for Ginormous, and we were on the Strip. And
by the way, that was my nickname in college.
Ginormous?
Yeah, right.
Was it? It's my nickname now. People call me that on set. They're just like, yo, Ginormous. Boy, that's a little rude.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I get, hey, Double Dare guy.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Food Network guy.
Do you get that?
All
Double Dare guy?
Hey, Double Dare guy.
Yeah. I get ginormous. I get ginormous, which is, it's like, did you guys have to pick a word that also kind of describes me so people wonder, well, that fits, so maybe that is his name.
People are so rude.
It's funny,
they?
Too. I'll probably get called ginormous, and I go, you know, that's just the name of the show. And they're like, I don't even know about a show. It's just what I'm calling you. It's just what you looked like, a ginormous. It's like that scene in Tommy Boy when he's like, you look like a Helen. But yeah, we were in Vegas and we're looking around and it's like Giada's,
yes.
Guy Fieri's American Bar and Grill.
By the way, you have to pronounce, if you're going to be on Food Network, Fieri.
Oh, Fieri. Yeah. Okay.
Don't let him.
I'll edit it out.
Yeah.
I'll edit out the Fieri. Fieri. He has his restaurant, and these guys, the crew
Bobby
goes.
Bobby Flay.
Yeah, Bobby's is there. You know, obviously, Gordon has his restaurant there. Wolfgang has, like, four restaurants there, I think.
Mario Batali.
So, yeah, we went to Mario's Carnivino before, which is one of my favorites.
Yep.
And, but anyway, we're looking around the Strip. There's all these restaurants. And the crew goes, man, you won't have made it until you got a restaurant on the Strip. And I go, I got two of them. Look, right there. They look pointing at Denny's.
Very nice.
Yeah. I was just like, there you go. I was like, I already got several. I've got thousands of locations.
Worldwide.
So family namesakes. And I was like, I challenge you to find a better value.
Is Denny your real last name?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah. What did you think that was, a stage name?
You never know these days.
I should have. In hindsight, when I look back at all the jobs that eventually found out about my comedy and didn't care to have an executive in that field as well, I was like, I should have thought of a stage name.
You know, back in the day when I started in radio in 1967, it was one-syllable first names and two-syllable last names.
Always.
And so Mark Berkowitz, for many reasons, didn't make it, so Mark Summers worked perfectly. There was a DJ when I grew up in Indianapolis, Dick Summer, who worked at WIFE in Indy, and then when I moved to Boston, he was working up there. And I just took his last name, added an S, and became Mark Summers, and it worked.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I was Berkowitz, I couldn't get arrested. I became Mark Summers, I started to work.
Right.
So strange.
Yeah, and it's almost the opposite now. Now you got to go back to Berkowitz.
It's true, I never thought of it. I need a little boost in my career, go back and be a junior.
Yeah, it's so funny. We were joking, I don't want to put him on the spot, but we were joking with our director, David, who's got a very Jewish sounding last name, and he goes, it's Eastern European, I'm not even Jewish. And I go, don't tell anybody.
That's right.
Don't tell
It'll
anybody.
Work for you.
Yeah. He's like, you're probably right. It probably has worked for me over the years.
It's so weird. There was a guy by the name of Mark Daniels who was the director of almost all the original I Love Lucy episodes. So I'm doing warm ups on a show called Alice.
Audience warm up?
Audience warm ups. I did it for years. And so
it's
I'm
a good
on,
gig.
Oh, it was, oh, you have
it's
no idea.
It's still one of the only good paying gigs you can get. Like, there's another comic named Brody Stevens who does almost all the warm-up for Late Night and Comedy Central.
If you knew how much that guy made, your head would explode.
No, I know what he makes. Yeah. In my head, it's ridiculous.
He probably makes more than than you do hosting.
Yes, he does.
He does.
He absolutely does.
So
when they have a full show,
yes.
He makes $2,500 an episode to do audience warm up.
Yep.
And he'll do five or six in a week. And usually two in one night, three in another, or three in three.
Best
so he's
gig.
Really making like $15,000 for 2 days of work.
Oh yeah. It's the best job. And I was doing it back in the '70s and eighties. So I'm working on this show called Alice, and the director was Mark Daniels. I went, oh my God, I'm going to meet the guy who directed I Love Lucy. And he was an older guy. And was a, look, we're doing MASH over us right now.
There's
ridiculous. B-52 over us. Anyway, poor man passes away at a ripe old age, and I go to the funeral, and I walk in, and it says, in memory of Danny Marcus. And I start to leave, and they said, excuse me, where are you going? I said, oh, I'm supposed to be at the funeral for Mark Daniels. I'm in the wrong place. He said, no, this is what... His real name was Danny Marcus. I didn't know it, but back when he started directing in like the 30s and 40s, he said no Jews could get a job, and so he changed the name to Mark Daniels and started to work. This guy used to throw the best Christmas parties of any human I ever met, and all these years I knew him, never knew he was a Jewish guy.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah. I had no idea.
He was so deep cover
that
he was throwing huge, immaculate Christmas parties.
His foreskin grew back. It was unbelievable, you know? That's how un-Jewish he became.
He's just in the other room, like, lighting a menorah in secret, like, please,
don't
please.
Find me.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, he's like, the menorah's in the attic. We do Christmas down here where the people are.
Yeah, he had copies of Anne Frank and everything. It was
amazing.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, so I did warm-ups. I started off doing Star Search and Alice and Webster and What's Happening Now and, you know, Our Magazine and Soap. And I was making a huge amount of money that nobody knew existed back then. At one time, I was doing Soap. On the stage next to me was Bob Saget doing Bosom Buddies. And the next stage was Barney...
Which a lot of people don't know is pre-Full House. Right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And then Barney Miller, where Dave Letterman was doing the warm-ups. So we were working on this sort of triangular stage, and that's how we all got started.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. I always feel like I'd be the warm-up guy who offends somebody and lasts 2 days.
It's hard not to offend people, let me tell you, because you're out there for hours.
Oh, you know? Yeah, and you're riffing. And, you know, you start to get comfortable with the audience.
Yes.
And you go, I can take it here. And then you do, and you see that one person who's like, I need a producer to speak to.
Right.
And next thing you know.
I was doing What's Happening Now, and this girl smiled, and I said, you have the biggest dimples I've ever seen in my entire life. Well, I see the whole booth go crazy. And I go to dinner, and the executive from Warner Brothers says, I need to talk to you. I said, okay. He goes, you know, I'm going to fire you. And I said, why? He said, why did you say that girl had the biggest nipples you've ever seen in your entire life? He said, I never said nipples. I said dimples.
Oh, my
and he
God.
Goes, oh, well, we thought you said nipples. Okay, get out of here.
You're fine. Come back to work tomorrow.
But, you know,
that's hilarious.
Of, you know, yeah, I would have said nipples.
Also, how would you have known? First of all,
those studios are cold.
I was going to say, if you noticed in the studio through a sweater, she did have the biggest that you've ever seen in your life.
Oh, my God. I've never told that story. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, that is funny. That's hilarious that they thought that. Yeah, and that's my biggest... I don't even know if it's my biggest fear or if I almost look forward to that day when somebody is like, we got to talk to you about your content. I'm like,
yes.
I've been waiting for this my whole life. Let's get into it.
It's unbelievable how people, you know, have no sense of humor today because they get offended by the slightest little things, you know?
But it's, you know what's really funny to me is there are things that we'll do on our show that I go, like, that's a little suggestive. And it slides through.
Really?
And it's just like, nobody caught that. But we had a problem with this, which on my scale, that's way more innocent than this thing that actually slipped through.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes it could just be like a double entendre where I say something with a literal meaning, but if you took it a different way, you'd be like...
You have a filthy mind, Mr.
Yeah, Denny. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and there were moments, like Netta could tell you, we're filming in Lavo in Las Vegas 2 weeks ago, and we're making these giant... They're known for these giant meatballs, so we're making the giant meatball... And the guy's like, oh, how do you know it's the right size? He goes, well, we weigh them out. And he goes, I actually feel like these are probably a little too big than what we would normally make. And I go, well, that's okay. And then I said, if you need me to shave them down a bit for you, I was like, I'll totally do that. Now, what I thought I was saying was like, I'll just skim some of the meat off and eat it because I'm fat and I love food. And it just sounded to everybody in the room like I just offered to shave this gentleman balls on national television. And to the point where I walked off and I just go, they're like, you see, you're in the grooming business now, Josh? And I go, what are you talking about? And they're like, you're shaving people's balls in the middle of a segment? And I go, oh, is that why you guys were laughing? I didn't, didn't even dawn on me.
That's hysterical. I love it.
There was another one, too. What was the other one that I said?
Talking to some bachelorettes and making a joke about, what was it, the Flashdance movie?
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I was saying something like, I was just like, we reenact scenes from movies all the time. I go, I was like, the promo for this year's show is just me on a chair soaking wet and I pull a chain and then, you know, whipped cream falls on me or something.
And he was like, whipped cream.
The Flashdance thing.
Whipped cream just falls on my face and everyone was like, again?
Like, we can't use this!
Again?
So some, like, I guess the
like
point,
an episode of Double Dare.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I kept looking around while we were in the place, like, am I gonna get
slimed?
Do you get that all the time?
People
come over for like Thanksgiving. They're like, is it safe to sit here, Mark?
Yeah, we toured Double Dare for 8 years. We did 40 personal appearances a year, and we'd play like the Palace of Auburn Hills, 20,000 people.
Yeah, because so, you would take that on the road.
Took it on the road.
Yeah.
So I'm doing this outdoor arena in Cleveland, and my opening act, believe it or not, was Mickey Dolenz.
Oh, my God.
And some of the stagehands came up to him and went, hey, hey, it's a monkey. And he said, yeah, first time I've ever heard that.
Yeah.
You know, because people don't realize when they come up and say stuff to you, like, you know, yeah, I get this. I like every freaking day. And,
yeah.
You know, but what can you do? You got to be nice to the public.
Oh,
you know?
Of course, yeah. And that's one of the things, like, I think doing comedy has prepared me for that a lot because, like, I've heard horror stories of guys like Adam who did like dealt with that kind of thing horribly.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like they just are not a people person and they're not used to the idea of being heckled by anybody.
It's tough.
And so when you come out of the clubs, I think you go into hosting and you have that, you're playing yourself, and so when you're out in public, people think they know you.
Yeah.
And they come up and they'll say things. And you know, it's one of those things where you gotta kind of have the thick skin of having been a stand-up to be able to just like roll with it and let it, you know.
But the internet has given people permission to be assholes.
Oh, okay? Yeah.
So, I you know, every now and then you want to look online or you go to your Twitter page or whatever, and I got this a couple years ago. I was walking down Sixth Avenue in New York, and I saw the worst host of the history of TV, Mark Summers.
Okay? Somebody said that?
Somebody said that. So I responded back, hey, a-hole, next time have the balls go up and tell me to my face.
Right.
At which point he goes, oh, I didn't mean it. I didn't know you were going to see this. And I think you're great and all this kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, because you're a coward.
Right.
Okay? Come up to me next time and tell me that you think I suck.
Hey, man, you suck.
Yeah.
Yell it from across the street.
Yeah, across the street.
At least then I would go, all right.
Yeah. I'd rather have that than you try to. And then they always backpedal, you know. Oh, I think you're great. I didn't mean, you know, this kind of stuff. But when you're in the public eye, this is, you know, it's just everybody.
It makes you a target.
Everybody has an opinion. You know?
Yeah. Well, and even then, sometimes it's like, it's in that situation, it's like it wasn't even his opinion.
Yeah.
He was just trying to think of something clever because he saw you.
Right.
And the first thing he went to was, I'll be negative. I'll shit on the guy.
Exactly.
And then you see it and he's like, oh, man, I didn't want to blow my opportunity to meet you over the internet being negative.
You know, I loved you on this show. I loved you. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Workaholics.
Where it's like,
I loved you on Workaholics. Okay, great.
We love that show.
That was the best.
It was a great show. But yeah, it's one of those things where people just feel, and I just love the things that people get outraged over, like, you know, I've done comedy for a long time and some of my material is considered controversial. And then, like, we put this show out and I think this show's the most sort of bubblegum, fun, like, completely innocent thing I've ever been a part of. And it just got destroyed on the internet when we came out. They're just
really?
Like, look at this gluttonous, fat piece of shit. Just shoving all that food in his face. And then, so I didn't say anything, because I learned, like, they'll fizzle out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't give them any attention.
No.
So then the show comes out, and they realize, like, the funniest thing was there was a guy who, like, a week before we aired was like, oh, this fat, gluttonous piece of shit. And then literally, the night we premiered, he goes, I'm going to check this. He's tweeting it. I'm going to check this out just to see what it's about. And then he gets, like, one act in, and he goes, oh, they actually share the food with everybody in the restaurant. Well, aren't I an ass? Like, just literally, you're hearing his inner monologue of, like, I completely was wrong about this, and he's putting it all on the
internet.
Imagine
that. He was wrong.
Yeah.
He hadn't even seen it, knew nothing about the show, and was making a judgment.
But it's one of those things, too, and I tell people, like, Those people don't even care that they think our show is wasteful.
No.
It's really what it is it's fat shaming disguised as virtue signaling disguising fat shaming. So these are people literally like, look at this fat piece of shit on TV. I'm fat, why don't I have a TV show? That's exactly what it is. But they disguise it as, oh, this show's so wasteful. You know,
you knew that like you were kind of gay.
Yeah, yeah. This show is so, and then they'll be like, they need to bring back shows like, and they'll name something where I just picture them putting dump trucks of food in the trash at the end. Like, I wish they would bring back this show. And it's like, that show wasted twice as much food as
they
we
only
waste.
Knew, right?
Yeah, they have no idea.
Oh,
so.
My God. Yeah, we used to get complaints all the time on Double Dare about, there are people starving and you're using eggs, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. And
did
and
you really
what?
Need to have five pies in the face? You couldn't have used four and give the fifth one to a homeless guy?
So we came up with this bullshit thing where we got so many complaints that Mike Klinghoff, our exec producer, said, we go to food warehouses and only buy food that's past its date.
Yeah.
So that they can't sell it, you know? None of that was true.
Of course.
But I told
not.
The people, shut the you know what.
Yeah, yeah. Shut up. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like you can't win with these people.
You cannot win.
They'll be offended no matter how you curtail it or anything else.
Once they're out to get you, they're out to get you.
Yeah. And I see it. Like, I don't even have to fight because we have fans, like a handful of fans, that will literally fight these people on message boards and threads. And it's so I'll sit back and I'm just like, sometimes I got a referee and I just step in and I go, Jim, stop. Like, they're not gonna get it, man. Like, that's fine. They don't like it. That's fine. Like, I don't understand where we came into this world where everybody thinks that everything should be for them.
I know.
You know, like, it was one of those things where when I was doing comedy and people would complain about my comedy, I go, that's fine. You're not my customer. I don't make it for you. I make it for people with a sense of humor like mine.
Yes.
And so it's the same thing with our show. Like, if you don't like watching people eat on television, first of all, the whole network's probably not for you.
That's right.
Maybe don't subscribe to their Facebook thread.
Right.
And
I always say, just don't watch.
Yeah, just don't watch.
Okay, stop complaining. Turn it off.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, really? It's just so stupid.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's shocking how connected people feel with their television.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, this is affecting me. And it's like, it doesn't have to. You go like this, it doesn't exist.
No, turn it off, go away. Go read a book, try that.
And there's people that are like, this needs to be canceled. I am the kind of person that will go in and I'll go back and find that this show needs to be canceled. And I'll just post the link of our renewal below their comment. I will do that. I will be kind of a ninja where I'm just like, I just wanted to follow up and let you know that we're totally hearing you. Renewed for 13 more episodes.
I got into a fight on the radio once with Sean Hannity.
Really?
Yes.
And that's a shocker. He seems like such an agreeable man.
And then Ted Nugent calls.
Oh,
okay?
God.
And this was...
So you got double teamed.
I got double teamed. And this was back in the day when Food Network had a board where you could make comments about the hosts and the shows, which no longer exist.
This was before social media, early in the internet.
Early on.
When it was all message boards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people were, you know, we're going to boycott Mark Summers and... all the advertisers and all this other, and you know, it was absolutely ridiculous because you have an opposing point of view, and all of a sudden they started calling the Food Network, and Brooke Johnson, who was running the place at the time, called me and goes, Mark, what's going on? I'm getting all these, you know, hate phone calls about, and I said, I'm having a disagreement with Sean Hannity, and she said, oh, that's all it was? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things, like, this is what people don't understand. There's like it's a balancing act of being provocative but not controversial.
And it's because, a hard tightrope to walk.
Yeah, because if you're not provocative and you're just boring, no one will watch you.
Who cares?
Right. They just go, well, this guy's kind of boring.
Yeah.
So you got to have that little bit. And I tried to explain this to the network when I started, when it was just like, it's good that my comedy is out there as an Easter egg for people that are really into the show to find. Mm-hmm. And of the 100% of people that watch the show, 50% will care enough to go find my comedy.
Yep.
And 50% of them will actually listen to it. And 50% of them will actually like it and stay on. And the other 50% won't. But it's ultimately not going to affect the show.
It's not. And, you know, like you, when we were meeting for the first time,
yeah,
you didn't know I had a background in stand-up.
No, it's so crazy.
So, you know, if you're doing stand-up, chances are you're a little edgy.
Yeah.
Okay? And so my reputation is being a kid show host and doing Unwrapped. And yes, I've done that successfully on two iconic television shows.
But before that...
I was a stand-up comic fighting for my life with hecklers. And you have lines that you use. And I got thrown out of the Magic Castle once.
As a performer?
As a performer.
Yeah.
Because I got heckled. And I said, stick around, sir. We're going to make... how'd this line go? What was that line? Oh, we're going to put dough on the seats. We're going to stick your face in. We're going to make asshole cookies.
Okay? Oh, that's hilarious.
And I got thrown out of the Magic Castle for a year because
I said asshole cookies
at the Magic Castle in 1978.
Not only am I going to use that, I'm gonna meta use that to troll people. I'm gonna be like, oh, you made cookies with my face on them? Yeah, they're asshole cookies.
So that got me thrown out of a club for a year.
That's hilarious.
But that was in the 70s. And so, you know, when people hear me, you know, do some stuff like
that. Yeah, they'll be like, oh my God. How dare you, Mark Summers?
I know. And it's just,
you were the voice of a generation.
Well, and I am, and I'm proud of that, but the fuck do you want me to do?
But also before that, like, you were not just a comedian in L.A.
Right.
You weren't a comedian in L.A. in, like, the golden age of comedy.
In the 70s, I started with Jay Leno and Robin Williams, Dave Letterman, Gary Shandling. These were all the guys I started with.
All guys known for their cleanliness
and
their lack of habits outside of comedy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Dave's squeaky clean.
Yeah,
right?
of course.
He never had any problems.
Well, it's funny because people see Dave now and he's got the beard and he's like 50 pounds heavier and he's just happy as fuck.
He is.
And you see him and people are like, oh man, that Dave Letterman has really let himself go. And I know he's found himself again.
He gets to be himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known him for a long time. We used to play racquetball in 76 and around there. And, you know, these guys are clever and fun and funny, but they're tortured. I mean, Jay may be the only comic I know who was never tortured. He was always...
He seems that way, too.
Yeah, no, he's that way. Dave was tortured. Robin, obviously, was tortured.
Yeah.
Shandling, yes. I mean, there's something that motivates you to get in front of an audience and put yourself
out grievances.
There. Yes, exactly.
Which is a lot of what comedy is.
That's what it is. Yeah. And you try to find your voice, which is hard to do initially. I was sort of an observation comic, more David Brenner-ish back in the day because I wanted to get on television. And so if you came out there and did... constant swearing a la Pryor.
You're not getting on television.
You couldn't get hired.
Yeah.
And my first show I did was a show called Norm Crosby's Comedy Shop. It was my first national shot. And Dick Martin from Rowan & Martin introduced me like he had discovered me.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he had never seen my act. We're backstage and he says...
This next guy, I just found him. He was waiting tables across the street.
Yeah.
I found him.
And he said to me, what do you want me to say? Because I don't know anything about your act, you know? And he goes out, here's a guy I know and love. Please welcome him.
Yeah.
So that's the way the business works, you know? It's just so insane how that whole thing happens. But, you know, I went from doing warm-ups to doing, this, you know, comedy and magic and stand-up to hosting. But when I came out to L.A. in 73, it took me 13 years till I landed Double Dare. So, you know, that was a long period of time. I mean, the way I used to make a living, on Sunday nights, there was a club called Big Jaws in Long Beach, and I used to host wet T-shirt contests for $50
nice.
On Sundays.
So you were doing Double Dare before it was a show.
That's exactly right.
So you're taking sitting the physical there one night, challenge. Yeah, they're shooting them up with the water, and you're going, what if this is like a green oozy substance?
That's right. And it wasn't pus.
Yeah.
I've never used the word pus on the radio.
Yeah, before. There you go.
There you go.
That's one of those things. That's so funny. But it's. I think it's refreshing to hear that it took 13 years.
Yeah.
Because when I've been out here I've been a comic for 10, I've been out here for 8, and I was talking with another comedian about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, a guy named Mike Faberman, and he's been in the business for a long time. He's also a chef. Mm-hmm. But he was telling me, I was like, oh yeah, we're doing this pilot, and you know, who knows if it'll go anywhere. He goes, how long have you been doing comedy? I was like, about 9 years now, and he goes, you're fucking ahead.
Yeah.
Because most of these guys don't even get sniffed until they're 10 years in.
Yeah.
And he's like, so if you're 9 years in and you're doing pilots, he's like, you're just fine.
It's so true.
And then to be where we're at now, it's like, it's unheard of to have...
People don't believe how long it takes to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
You know? So I was 34 when I started doing Double Dare.
Yeah, same age I am now, basically. Yeah.
So, I mean, and who knew that was going to turn into what it... And if somebody would have told me that Unwrapped would have been an iconic show, I would go, really? And so, you know, longest running show on Food Network. Crazy.
Yeah, and you were saying at lunch, you were like, I had two shows at the time.
Yeah.
One was on History, and you thought, like, this is it. This is going to be the one.
History IQ was supposed to be the hardest game show. In fact, it was so hard nobody could answer any of the questions. And we did, like, 90 of those things. And I was doing a show called It's a Surprise on Food Network. It was a thing about surprise parties. It sucked. And they showed me Unwrapped. They had done a special with a guy by the name of Mark Silverstein. 3 episodes, 1 hour. And I was up doing the National Team Pastry Championship in Colorado somewhere. And they showed me the special, and they said, what do you think? And I said, I think what Biography is to A&E, Unwrapped could be for Food Network. And sure enough, that's what it became.
That's what it became.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, 11 years.
11 years. And the fact that they're bringing back Biography to A&E, I've said to Food Network, why don't we bring this back and you know, do it as a nostalgia thing?
I thought it was great. I mean, I remember, like, I never watched Food Network until I saw Unwrapped.
Really?
And I was just like, oh, this is like, I was like, this is cool. Like, I remember the first episode I saw was how saltwater taffy was made. And I was just like, holy shit, I didn't know
in Atlantic City.
Yeah, I was just like, I didn't know how saltwater taffy was made.
I remember that.
And it was.
And Netta, your significant gorgeous other sitting here to my left, your right, said that when you were junior high.
Yeah, I was in a.
That's a truck. That's not the gas from after.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. Jewish deli food.
That's right.
I was in junior high.
Nice, Netta. Really nice.
Okay. I was in junior high when I started watching Unwrapped. And the same, I never watched Food Network. Because I didn't really care about, like, making food. But I cared about the foods I was eating. Like Twinkies, Ding Dongs, all that.
Let the truck go. Now you're good. I was like, let the audio go by.
That's it. You learn the history and, you know, all the stuff you've been eating. And that was so much fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it was, that was like, to me, there was something interesting. Like, oh, I'm learning about food and I'm learning other stuff. And that's so much, like, to me, what should make, I'll say, Food Network different from Cooking Channel is there should be that connection of, like, how do we show food to people that normally aren't into food.
Right, exactly.
But I almost feel like that's kind of, I feel like I get that and you get that.
Yeah.
I don't know if they know that that's kind of the way Food Network is viewed by the viewer.
I think it's
almost like the gateway Food Network.
Well, back in the day when we were number one for like 3, 4, 5 years in a row, you know, guys like Mario Batali used to get pissed at me because they were doing this great cooking stuff.
Like real technical in the weeds.
And Unwrapped would be number one every week.
Yeah.
So go figure, you know?
Well, and I think
it's relatable.
Yeah,
you know, that's the word.
And that's what, like you said, it brings people like me that didn't watch Food Network and didn't care so much about how to make food. But if I'm eating the foods that you're talking about and the history of it, I care about that.
Draws you to the set, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the fun about my show is I don't know anything. So I'm entering into these kitchens with like a totally like, so I can't remember what we made the other day, but we made something I've heard said about it. I'm like, what exactly is that?
Mm-hmm. And then you ask the questions that the viewer wants to know. That's why
right. Yeah. And that's what, but it's genuine.
Yeah.
I have a genuine interest of like, I was like, cause it was pastrami.
Mm-hmm.
I said, like, you know, brisket pastrami. I thought pastrami was the kind of meat. Like it's just, there's ham and there's beef. And then there's this other thing that's pastrami.
No.
And they go, no, pastrami is the preparation. And I just go, what the... So when people say turkey pastrami, they're not just... It's not an imitation. It's actually done the same way.
Absolutely.
And so that whole thing got explained to me, and I was just like, well, I feel really smart now, and I feel like I used to be really stupid.
Well, no, if you felt that way, then there's a viewer who certainly felt the same way.
Yeah.
And you're giving him that information.
And who knows if that'll even make it into the episode. But to me, that was like a genuine moment of...
Discovery.
Yeah, pastrami's not just beef. Or, you know, there can be turkey pastrami if it's prepared the same way and sliced the same way and everything else. So, but it was one of those things of not really knowing kind of the something that most people would presume if you're in a deli and you're doing a show about it, like, he knows pastrami. And
not
I didn't
necessarily.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between you and me don't know much about food, or at least we didn't. I, you know, I've been indoctrinated after being Food Network 17
years.
Well,
it's that way, even after, 14 episodes, I'm like... Oh, I know so much more than I knew beforehand.
I'm such a better cook because of what I've learned through osmosis. But then you have Guy Fieri on Triple D, who is a trained chef. So he has a different point of view than you or I would have.
Yeah.
And there's something for all the viewers out there. You got the guy who knows what he's talking about in the kitchen. Then they got a guy like you who's learning at the same time they're learning. And then you got a guy who, you know, is talking about the history and makes comments about, I didn't know that. Or, you know, I used to say that all the time. I never knew that.
Yeah.
Because it's real.
But I think that's what made Unwrapped such a cool show. Was because the viewers going along with you on that ride.
Yeah.
You're not to camera like, you fucking idiots don't know any of this. I knew all this. Like, but there are some shows that come off that way
true.
Where you're just like, well, I don't like this guy already knows everything. I don't like that.
I was doing a show at Joe's Pub in New York a couple of years ago with some friends, and I was emceeing, and they wanted me, they showed a classical obstacle course. And they played it with me making my comments. Oh, he's going to go up the Sunday slide. And then they reran it and had me say what I was really thinking.
Oh, wow.
It was unbelievable because you say stuff internally that you would never say externally.
All the time.
You know, because we would run the kids around the courts and say, you know, don't put your foot here because it'll get whipped cream on it. So make sure you go up the side of the slide and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you say on your mark, get set, go, and the kids don't think of anything. And inside you're saying, okay, I told that moron not to stick his foot in there.
He's going
to
do it.
I can't freaking believe that he's not going to win this course. But, you know, and they had a ball. It was just funny to do.
What were those funny moments on Double? Like, in terms of your time on Double Dare, what was the time?
Well, we used to do
what
rehearsals.
Was something that stuck out?
Well,
it's probably dozens.
Well, yeah, believe me. You know, we would test all the physical challenges, and if they didn't work three times, then we never did them. But the testing would happen from 7 o'clock at night till 9 at night, and we'd bring kids in from the New Jersey and Pennsylvania school systems. Well, at that hour of the night, and keep in mind, it was a kid show run by a bunch of crazy adults.
Right.
Everything became sexual.
Oh, okay? Of course. Of course.
Everything was,
it's the nature of it.
It was. And little did we know that Master Control was taping all of these rehearsals. And, of course, we weren't making the sexual innuendos to the kids. But we would go off to the side.
And you're doing it yourself.
Right, but they would be recording our audio.
Oh, God.
So the next thing I know, I get a phone call from New York from Jerry Laybourne, who was the president of the network, saying, what in the hell's going on down there? They were showing these tapes internally at WHYY where we were shooting.
God.
And they said, you know, once again, if the internet was around, we would have all been
You'd
fired.
Have been done.
We would have been done.
Yeah.
But the stuff that was going on behind the scenes was, like, pretty insane.
Comedy gold.
Oh,
yeah.
The best stuff ever.
Yeah.
And that's, it's almost like drunk, you know, history. You wanted to hear what was going on when things didn't work. But, of course, you know, thank God there was no internet back then. But, you know, we were just people. And, once again, I was a stand-up comic hosting a kid's show.
Yeah.
Come on. You know?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember early in my career, I was like, you know, I got to be honest. I don't know which one would be more tough, gay porn or kids' television. Because they are
probably
very...
Probably the kids' TV.
Yeah, probably the kids' TV. I go, the kids' TV is probably twice as messy, first of all.
Well, it depends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I was just like, oh, man. Because I remember watching shows like that, like where you're supposed to suspend belief. And there's a guy, like Blue's Clues. I'm just like, that guy walks off set and is like, give me a beer. And,
that's right.
And like, is like a man. That's
yeah.
like a that's a dude
yeah.
who lives an adult dude life.
Yes.
And he has to go to this pretend world for like an hour yeah, every day.
Where's Blue?
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Like, that's acting, man.
Oh, man.
That's acting. Those guys deserve all the Emmys.
But see, part of the reason I think Double Dare was a success was I never wanted to host a kid show.
Yeah.
I just wanted to host a game show. And so I treated them, you know, I never
like
said.
Like adults.
I did. I never said, Bobby, do you have a girlfriend? I never did that.
Yeah.
I'd make fun of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it played really well. Every now and then I'd get my hand slapped by Viacom saying, you know, you can't make fun of the kids like that.
Yeah, but look, when the fat one goes down the slide, you can't giggle like that, Mark.
Like, that's right.
I can't help it.
That's
you guys
right.
are looking at him, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's certain things back in the day that you had to restrain
yourself.
The
kid just runs silly. That's why I could never be like a judge on MasterChef, because when the kids like spill cookies and break down emotionally, I would laugh hysterically. I mean, like I watched MasterChef Junior all the time. And there was one where a little kid went running back to their station and just wiped out.
Really?
And went like face first into the oven. And I must have played it back like 30 times.
Yeah,
just like, this
hysterical.
Is like, look at his face. He's going right into it. It's one of those things.
You slip on a banana peel, it's still funny.
It's, yes.
Can I tell
it's, that's the thing of like, you can't, it's so hard. And it's got to be hard for a guy like Gordon, whose natural instinct is to be intense and direct with people.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, it's like he's in front of these kids and he's got to be encouraging and nice. And
it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
I was just like, put me on like Kids Chopped. I'm going to be the worst. Just in there judging like, ugh, next.
Well, sometimes, you know, I've been a judge on Guy's Grocery Games, and there are certain episodes where the food is amazing.
Yeah.
And every now and then the food is not so amazing. And, you know, you have to come up with something nice about what they've made, because it's hard. You're on TV for the first time, and you're running around, you're trying to do the best you can.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you try the food, and it's like, oh, this is the worst, you know, gruel I've ever had in my entire life.
Well, and Chop, too, has got to be weird, because they're like, your ingredients are roasted chicken.
An armadillo.
Yeah, armadillo shell and a used football. And you're just like, all right, well... Not only do they have to cook with that, but then you want me to eat the football?
I know.
Like, it's terrible. Well, it is pigskin.
You know, yeah. The best person, as far as descriptions, is Alex Granicelli. I can listen to her describe food
all
day
great.
Long. You know, her and Ina Garten are like two, just their voices. I love their descriptions. And it's hard to do. You realize when you get on these shows that to have a culinary vocabulary that describes what you're eating and the yin and yang of it is quite difficult.
They took me to boot camp in New York.
Did they?
To learn that.
Where did they take you?
To Chelsea, to the commercial kitchen behind the chop set. So we did a culinary boot camp with our culinary producer. No.
No.
Well, maybe Rob was there, but we were working with Chanel, who's our culinary producer.
Yeah.
And then... just a Brinks truck.
Yeah, I had to come in to pick up all the money that I made last week. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Mine'll fit in the back of that CRX.
How do they give you culinary training?
They took us in and they were like, we're going to make like 10 things and you're going to describe how they taste and we're going to coach you on it and teach you. And then it was also about safety and basic process of like knowing how to do things.
Like wearing a condom, you mean?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. They're like, you know, using protection. But it was like some of it was dumb things. Like if you're going to hand a knife to somebody, don't hand it blade first.
Oh, and of course, know that.
But my nature as a comedian is to lean into those things and to be like, I was like, Chanel, the knife, and I just handed to her with the blade out, and I'm just going like this, and she's just like, stop, that's great. Like, so she learned like 2 episodes in not to take me seriously about any of that. But it is one of those things of, it was mind-blowing that they were like, you need to have. And I'm thinking, I can describe food, but you're totally right. Like, you get in and you go, how many times have I said crispy crunchy today?
Yeah, you can't.
Like, you've got to kind of push deeper and find other ways to describe things.
Guy Fieri helped me a lot on that. First episode, I sucked, and I thought they're going to fire me. And he pulled me aside and really helped me, which was fantastic. 100 years ago, when I was hosting Next Food Network Star.
I remember that in the early days.
Yeah, I did it the first couple seasons, and then they got much better looking people than me to do it.
There has not been a star since Guy who's really gone on.
Interestingly enough,
since you stopped hosting as well.
Interesting. Huh? Yeah. Boy, maybe there's something we should look
into.
Maybe they should take a look into that. Certainly Jeff Morrow's done well and Artie's done well. And there's some, Damaris, and there's been some really good talent that come out of that thing. But I learned a lot by...
No, it's Bobby and Giada.
Bobby and Giada.
Yeah.
On my best day, I never looked that good. You know, Bobby is...
As Giada?
Bobby's in his 50s now.
That's ridiculous, by the way. Bobby looks 27.
Oh, my God. He's training for the London Marathon now. This man looks like $1 million.
Yeah.
And we...
I look like 725.
Well, I told him I was going on Weight Watchers. He's been trying to get me to lose weight for a while, and
well, he must hate me.
Oh no.
He's probably like, we can't do anything with him.
But
he's gone.
But I gotta go to Giada's restaurant. Did you go when you were
in Vegas? No. Yeah, that's the thing that stinks when we're filming these is people are like, where are you going for dinner?
Yeah.
To bed.
Yeah.
I probably ate 10,000 calories. I'm all set.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I gotta go. I'm going to Vegas in June. I'm gonna go see the Doobie Brothers and Chicago.
Nice.
Because I'm old. I gotta go. Maybe I'll go to Giada's then, because last time I couldn't get in.
It's Italian food, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
The lava where we went was Italian. That was good. But Giada, it's one of those things where I was just like, how are we not filming at one of these places or something? It's strange, but we did. We went to Las Vegas. We went to an Italian restaurant on the Strip, and they made us a ginormous dessert.
Nice.
So it's one of those things where like none of the theme mattered at all.
What was the dessert you had?
They do a strawberry shortcake that's off menu for birthdays and weddings?
One of my favorite desserts in the whole world.
Strawberry shortcake?
Oh, my God.
Oh, then we'll have to go there and get this one, and I'll call ahead and be like, make us the big one.
So was it like a biscuit or was it like a cake?
No, it's a strawberry shortcake, but it was like the shortcake was this big around.
Oh, my.
And it stood like, they call it the strawberry skyscraper.
Oh.
The
that's funny... That's my nickname.
strawberry shortcake. Nice, she doesn't call me strawberry skyscraper. that would be too flattering. She goes, while we're in there, she loves like desserts. So she's like eating all this food as we're on set. Not, but first of all, know that nothing went to waste in Las Vegas when Netta was with us because she puts it away.
Disposal. Really?
Literally.
But you don't show it. You're one of those lucky people.
Well, she's the age will get there where she does. Yeah.
Anytime we go out, I just eat his leftovers because he just never finishes his meals, and I have a huge appetite. So.
Well, so you had a salad for lunch, but you did have a bite of the corned beef sandwich.
Well, she knows we're getting ice cream after this.
Oh,
too,
there you go. Yeah, you're getting the $11 ice cream. Right?
Yeah, the liquid nitrogen.
I'm trying to be better. But when we first met, I would literally eat him under the table. Like one of the first nights we hung out, I ordered rack of like beef ribs, and I ate all of them. And he was like, "You didn't just eat all of it, did you?" And I was like, "I did." And he was like, "Oh my!"
We were so new to hanging out, she didn't take her shoes or jacket off, but she's sitting on my couch with this trough of beef ribs. Just, I'm just like, I think you're comfortable now.
Like
I was just like, Jesus Christ, man!
Amazing.
I had like a salad and a personal pizza, and she's just over there just with Flintstone ribs, just.
Right.
What's your favorite food of all time?
Oh, man.
If you can only eat one food.
People ask me this all the time. Like, my, what would my last meal be?
Yeah, one of those deals. I know mine, by the way.
Probably lamb.
Lamb?
Yeah, I'd probably have lamb chops from Kraft Steak in Vegas.
Wow.
That's probably, I think, one of the best things I've ever eaten in my life.
Nutta?
Not from a purely non-sentimental thing.
Right.
Because, like, from a sentimental thing, I'd go, like, my mom's nachos or my aunt who passed away 10 years ago, her lasagna. Right. But if I'm just going off pure,
right,
my favorite thing I've eaten, those lamb chops, yeah, I'd say, are the best.
Yeah. I would have to go with pizza.
That's mine.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite pizza place?
I don't know too many good, like, deep dish pizza, but places out here.
No, deep dish pizza sucks. Okay, I had this discussion with
a
sandwich boy.
It's not a pizza. It's a lasagna with
it's a
who's
sandwich
bread. Who's sandwich boy?
Jeff Morrow.
Oh, Jeff.
I fight with him all the time about it. There is no good deep dish pizza.
I just like thicker pizzas though. Like, as
really?
Because I want more of it. Like,
see, I want to be able to read a newspaper through it. I want thin.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Because I want more. Like, I literally can eat a thin pizza by myself and want more.
Oh yeah.
So I just want pizza on pizza. I don't know.
Next time in Philly, Mark Vetri. Okay, Pizzeria Vetri. Insane.
That's great.
The best pizza in the United States as far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
And if you ever go to Florence, Italy, there's a place.
I'll go right now.
Go right now. Pizzeria Sud, S-U-D. Oh, my God.
Pizza Sud.
Yeah, Pizza Sud. Fantastic.
It's good.
But that's the thing. I go around the country and try
pizzas
because it's the best food known to
man. I love pizza. Well, do you have a place here?
Well, L.A.'s a little tough. There isn't a lot of great pizza here that I've discovered. There's a Boston place that just opened here in South Beverly Drive. It's as close to East Coast pizza as you're going to get. There's a little restaurant in Brentwood that does a pretty good job.
I found two that I like.
Where's that?
One's in the Valley.
Called?
It's called, it used to be called Pepe's. Now it is something else. Starts with an S. Some woman bought it, changed the name. Same pizza.
It's good?
It's amazing.
And?
It's just the greasy, doughy. It's like the best East Coast stuff. And then the other one is Slice of New York in Seal Beach.
Wow.
It's like right on the little main street there where they filmed American Pie.
Yeah. And, I'm a Red Sox fan, and I keep getting all these things from
alerts.
Yeah, alerts.
I'm a Phillies fan, which is why my phone isn't going off at all.
Oh, and it won't for a long time.
It won't for probably 10 more years.
I know. We're having a little trouble. We're 4-4 right now with the Red Sox, but we're going
to
be fine.
Well, I saw the Phillies beat somebody 16-1, and I go, well, who was it? Like women's junior varsity for Villanova?
Or like, Toronto or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, 16-1, that's got to be a typo.
I was there when they won the series.
Were
last
you?
Time. Yeah, it was crazy.
It was nuts. My sister went to that game that was the final game.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And it was like, you know, chaos in the streets.
It was.
Because
it's
the first championship we've won in 50, 60 years.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, in Boston, we've won 3 World Series over the last few years. And then you've got the Celtics.
Very humble brag.
And then, of course, you got the football team, which has done quite well. I mean, that Super Bowl
was... The football team has done quite well. They're going to win more Super Bowls than any franchise ever.
Oh, my God. That game last year was the most insane thing I've ever seen.
Drama.
In my entire life.
I don't know how I don't know how somebody on the Falcons coaching staff or team didn't kill themselves.
How do you not after that? How do you blow that game?
It's funny that you say that because I was doing a podcast at a buddy's house. And I was like, I don't care about this. The Patriots are going to win. The Patriots are down like 28-3.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in the third quarter. And the Falcons have the ball. And I go, you want to know what I would do right now? I'd start running the clock out right now if I was Atlanta.
Sure.
Because that's Tom Brady, and you just keep him off the field.
Ice
I would
water
run it
in his
four
veins.
Downs.
Yes.
I would run it all four downs. I wouldn't punt. I'd just try to stay on the field and eat the clock up as much as I could. And they didn't. Not only did they not run, they threw it.
Yes.
And they lost the game.
They lost the game. That has
the
to
biggest
be
comeback in Super Bowl history.
Ever. And there will never be anything like that.
No.
I mean, that's crazy. And Brady's what, 40?
He was 39 last year. He's 40 this year.
I bet 3, 4, 5 more years left in him.
He's going to play 5 years.
I bet he is. That's crazy.
Because he stays healthy. I mean, he's only had one bad injury his whole career.
I know.
And, you know, he swears by his nutrition and his
and his wife.
Yeah, that'll keep you spry.
Yeah, that'll keep you young.
That'll keep you young.
Oh, my.
The old Giselle. She's okay. It was an old school when he comes out with the blow up doll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the girl's on the steps and she's like, I like your girlfriend there. And he's like, she's okay.
It's unbelievable. So nuts.
Oh, man. But best pizza. Yeah. So Slice of New York in Seal Beach. And then the other place is, it was Pepe's. I'm driving.
It's
where's that, in the valley?
Yeah, it's on Ventura.
It's
right on Ventura, and
some of the best pizza.
Fernanda's. It's Fernanda's now.
Fernanda's.
Fernanda.
Check it out.
Yeah, is in Italy. I've probably traveled to like 30 countries, and I've never gained so much weight than when I went to Italy. I was there like 12 days.
That's when she met me. No.
Okay. What city is your favorite in Italy? There's so many great ones.
Probably Florence. We went to Florence, Pisa, Rome. Where else did we go? I don't remember. We went to like 6 different cities, but I literally was there 12 days, came back 12 pounds heavier, because all you eat is pizza, pasta,
that's
gelato,
so good,
every meal of
the
day. Man.
But last year, this is what you should do, okay? I did a walking tour of Italy, Tuscany, and Umbria. We walked 70 miles in 6 days.
Oh, wow.
It was the best time.
So did you get to eat along the way?
Yes.
Okay, so I thought you were just telling me to do the walking.
No.
I was like, you're right, I do need to do that,
we
Mark.
We get up in the morning.
A little rude.
We'd walk for 7 miles, and then we'd end up in a backyard of a farmer's, house, and you'd have the freshest, most incredible salads and pasta and whatever, and then you'd drink some wine, and then you'd rest for an hour, and then you'd walk like 5 miles somewhere else, and you'd get cleaned up and go out to dinner, and I didn't gain any weight.
Yeah.
It was the best food ever. I saw the best scenery. I mean, Tuscany, you know, we started off in Florence, we went to Siena and went to a town called Spoleto. I fell in love with Assisi, where Francis of Assisi is from. And it was historical. It was the best exercise I've ever had and the best culinary I probably had ever in my life.
Yeah.
So I'll do a little plug, Country Walkers out of Vermont. I had the best time ever. It was amazing.
That was fun.
Oh, 12 strangers. And all you do is, I called a couple places. One place they wanted to teach you how to cook. Another place they wanted to teach you how to make wine. I said, I just want to freaking walk. That's what I love. That's my joy in life, is walking. And that's
walk
it.
And eat.
Walk and eat. And that's what we did for a week.
Mark's
walk
like, listen, eat. Periodically they're going to stop for food. I suggest you skip those. You just keep walking.
Keep walking.
Rack up that mileage.
And it was fantastic. I really enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I mean, those to me, that's like a vacation thing I would plan to do.
Yeah.
Where there's like a food tour. But you are, that is smart. You should walk to the food.
Oh, it was the best. Same thing in New York. I always schedule my meetings so I never take a cab, so I can walk from point A to point B. Because on the West Coast, other than the fact that I live 5 minutes from where we had lunch, nobody walks here.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy. I got to get in the car and drive. No, I want to walk somewhere.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm that way too. Like, we're kind of at the point where we're starting to think about, like, well, if we bought a house in LA, where would we want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a part for us, is like, is it a place where we can walk to get groceries and dinner?
Yeah.
Because if you can't do that, like some of these, we drove down Coldwater to get here.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at some of these houses and I go, you're 38 minutes from pizza.
Yep.
From delivered pizza.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Like, and that's not counting the cook time and the order time. Like, so you're 30 minutes door to door from pizza.
Wouldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
No.
I would never
do it. That's why I like this area, because South Beverly is fantastic. I can walk to everything. There's a million restaurants. There's a grocery store down the street there. And it's got the best of all worlds. It's close to New York. I mean, Pasadena has an area.
Yes.
Where you
like
can
Colorado
walk.
And
yes.
Raymond, yeah.
And in fact, there's actually...
We hang out there a lot, actually.
Well, there's a mall, and then there's like apartments above or condos or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing wouldn't be so bad either. But I need to live in an East Coast environment even when I'm on the West Coast. I just love walking. That's why when I had my place in Philly, I could walk everywhere. I didn't own a car for 11 years in Philadelphia because I could walk everywhere. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that's nice. That's the thing that's kind of tricky about here, is I don't mind driving to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So if you're going to a game or you're going to a show or you're going to the movies, that's fine. But it would be nice to live in a place where our neighborhood's walkable. We're just kind of on the wrong end of our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it would be nice to be in a place where you can just, like, let's walk down and have dinner.
What? Oh, so you're in Burbank?
Yeah.
So I used to have an office in Burbank. And what's the main drag there?
Olive?
Yeah, I used to have a place. There used to be a lot of pretty good restaurants there in the mall at the end and stuff like that. But
No, that's San Fernando.
Is it
San Fernando? That's, you're talking about downtown Burbank?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a cool area.
Yeah.
So we're like on the other side of the highway from downtown Burbank.
I know where that is.
And then we're not quite in Toluca Lake.
Okay.
So we're literally sort of like we're by the AAA and the Pavilions.
I know exactly.
On
where
Alameda.
You are. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That we're like in no man's land.
Right.
We can walk to the grocery store if we want.
There used to be a good Chinese restaurant there, but I don't think it's there anymore.
Joy Feast?
Maybe that was it.
Yeah, that just closed.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And you know what's funny is their reviews online were terrible, so we never tried it.
But the
and then it
was
closed,
good.
And we talked to people, and they were like, dude, it was the best.
It was. I don't understand. That's really weird.
Yeah. But everything on that stretch is like closing, and they're building more apartments, more condos.
They're building a Whole Foods and
they are?
Starbucks like complex with apartments across from Morton's.
There used to be. Yeah,
speaking,
oh, I know where
speaking
that is.
Of the biggest dimples you've ever dimples. Seen, yes. Dimples, dimples used to right. be there.
That's right.
On the corner.
A comedy writing class that Danny Simon, Neil's brother, used to teach me, and we used to do it at Dimples, man. So that place finally closed?
Yeah, they bought it from him, and...
what is it now?
They're tearing that whole corner down, really? And it's going to be a Whole Foods and, like, a lifestyle center. So, like, have, like, the Whole Foods, a CVS, some restaurants, and then there'll be... We might move in there.
That's kind of a cool area. There used to be a restaurant by there called... It was a Jewish-Chinese restaurant called Kosherama.
Oh, yeah?
That was killer. Yeah, back in the day when I used to work over at Warner Bros.
Well, there's a guy, I would love to try his food, and he's over here somewhere, but it's Mexi Kosher.
Never heard of it.
So he does, like, the chef's name is Katsuji, I don't know his last name, but because everyone just calls him Katsuji.
Mexi Kosher?
But he does kosher Mexican food.
Come on.
Right here in Beverly Hills.
Okay, we got to look this up now. Mexi Kosher, Beverly Hills. Let's see if Siri can come up with it. My Siri couldn't find it. Can your Siri?
I just typed it. Mexico, sure. It is on. Oh, it's West Pico, so maybe it's on the west side.
Yeah.
But
really?
Yeah. But he does like kosher Mexican food, and that's his thing. He was on Top Chef 2 seasons.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, I think less because of his culinary prowess, and more because he's an obnoxious, you know, character.
Wow, I didn't know that existed.
But yeah, that's one of the places I want to go and cover on the show.
Mexico.
Not ginormous food on the podcast.
Yeah.
But that's the thing of the podcast. I try to get out and go to places I haven't been and sit down with people I don't know very well.
Yeah.
It makes for better radio.
It does. Well, right behind us is Jeffrey Zakarian's restaurant, Georgie. He's in town fairly often. You should sit and talk to him. Best guy ever. Fantastic.
Yeah, he'd be good. The other guy I've been trying to get on the podcast is my buddy Nick Liberato, who's at Venezuela.
Don't know that place.
Oh, it's so good.
Really? What?
Yeah, I'll tell you, no.
What is it?
They do seafood. They do like a fish taco, but he does Italian food there and stuff too. He's a Philly guy.
Really?
And he makes maybe some of the best meatballs I've ever had in my life.
Huh. Beef, veal, pork.
I think it's beef and pork.
Okay.
No veal.
No veal.
But his sauce, it's like right out of Little Italy in Philly.
Huh.
It's amazing. Really good
sauce
stuff.
Sauce or gravy?
Well, gravy if we're Italian, but I'm not Italian.
That's it.
I'm one of those people. I don't say gyro correctly because I'm not Greek.
Right.
And I don't say gravy because I'm not Italian. I feel like that's like offensive. If I go, oh, the gravy? Are you talking about a hero? Like, you look like an asshole when you do that.
You're talking about Greek. My wife's Greek.
Yeah.
And one of the lines I used to use in stand-up, which used to piss her off more than life, was I said, my wife is Greek on our wedding night. She walked down the aisle backwards. Okay? She used to... and she used to get so mad
she
at me.
She'd get mad at that?
She never enjoyed that line. And if you have to think about it, oh, look, we're doing, you know, the Indy 500 right here on...
Did you run into this in all your years of filming? Like, you're outside and you're by a major street and people just love to yell stuff?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Like, just to piss you off. It's unbelievable.
They'll do it when we're not even rolling. They just see the camera and they want to yell stuff across the street.
Especially in Vegas. The drunk people on the strip, he was filming, and what are you filming?
They're just getting right into the lens. Like
right behind the camera.
New York's the worst, though.
Oh, I can imagine.
There's a Mario Andretti going right down the street.
Ducatis aren't supposed to make that kind of noise.
I thought they were a lot quieter.
Yeah, he's definitely got an aftermarket exhaust on
there. There's an experience you have to try. We're getting away from food here, but I grew up in Indianapolis. And,
nope, I won't try Indianapolis.
You won't try
I'm against it.
Yeah, well, so many people are. I go to the 500, and they have this two-seater race car. And you sit in the back, and if you're lucky enough, Andretti drives you, but they're obviously other professional drivers. And you go like 200 miles an hour on the Indy 500. When you're on TV, you get to do things that most people don't get to do. I've got to throw first pitch out at Fenway. I flew with the Blue Angels. But doing 200 miles an hour around the Indy 500 in the back seat of a race car is perhaps the most frightening thing I've ever done in my entire life. I want you to try that.
I will.
Call Food Network and tell them.
Get me on the track.
Get you on the track. Do food at the 500 and that you want to go around. You won't believe it.
Well, I would love to. One of the reasons I'm kind of glad we're wrapping this season up in the summer is because I would love to do a tailgate special.
Oh, that'd be cool.
For our show
and
go out to some of the Big Ten, you know, tailgates and some of the SEC tailgates.
You'd be great at that. It's the most pitched show at Food Network. They stopped doing them because everybody was doing them. But it's been a while, and it would make sense, certainly for your show, to go and do that. That'd be cool.
Yeah, just to see the biggest stuff that people make.
Yeah.
Guys that are roasting, you know, whole hogs out in the parking lot.
Absolutely.
Be fun.
But yeah, I think, what was I going to say? Oh, speaking of Indianapolis, St. Elmo's, one of the best restaurants I've ever been to.
Oh my God, but that, the sauce that you dip the shrimp in is something that will clear your sinuses for a week.
That's the hottest cocktail sauce I've ever had.
There's more horseradish in that stuff than you can believe. But St. Elmo's is you have to go if you go to Indy.
Amazing steak.
Yeah.
One of the best steaks I've ever had.
Very expensive for an Indy restaurant.
For Indianapolis.
Yeah, it's very high, but especially during a race weekend, you can't get anywhere near the place.
No. Same with on Sundays when the Colts are playing.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get anywhere near there either.
It's amazing.
I remember they used to say Peyton Manning. They got pictures of Peyton Manning all over the place in there. Like, he goes in there pretty regularly. But yeah, I mean, it's that's a great place. I mean, there's so many great places, but this is an area. Yeah, I feel like this is an area that I don't explore enough.
Beverly Hills,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of great restaurants here. Well, where Georgie is now, used to be Scarpetta. And Scott just opened up a new restaurant on Beverly that I'm actually going to Saturday for the first time. I mean, he makes great Italian food. So you got Scott Conan here. You got these folks here. I'm trying to think. There's so many. South Beverly Grill, which is a block away.
Yeah.
That's our go-to spot. We eat there probably three nights a week.
Oh, wow.
You got to go there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a Hillstone restaurant, but those guys have it nailed. They know exactly what they're doing. There's everything from sushi to
steak.
It's everything. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, I went to the Hillstone in Santa Monica back when I used to have stores in Santa Monica. It's a great restaurant.
It is. We just went to one in Chicago. I didn't even know there was one in New York called Hillstone. The menus are all very similar, but they have it down.
Yeah.
They just know how to make great food.
It works. Now, you said you've gotten more into the kitchen since you started doing it. What's the thing you learned that you were like, I never thought I'd be able to do that, but I can do that?
Well, you know, I've gained all sorts of confidence because my wife is an amazing cook. And
what's that like?
Oh my God! It's really.
This one struggles with a microwave.
Really?
Oh yeah, I do all the cooking.
I don't like cooking.
Oh my, that's interesting.
I have zero patience.
Oh wow.
Plus, I just eat the food as I go because I have zero patience and
that's
interesting. It doesn't hit the table.
See, my wife is a great cook, and I got married. I weighed 137 pounds at the year one. I was 163.
I believe it.
And so, I was on.
That's what I gained when I met her, and she doesn't even cook. Just from having an accomplice to eat with. Who so goes, let's get dessert.
I'm on the Donnie and Marie show, and they take a close-up of me. Oh, thank you. That was very nice. And I had, like, 17 chins. I remember that.
Like Forrest Gump and his Dr. Peppers.
It was insane. And I that was the first diet I went on because, you know, you do that freshman, first year of marriage, 30 pounds. And that was not good.
That's why you don't want to get married. Because you heard about the freshman 30.
Oh, my God. It's like going to college your first year. And just,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I gained 30. My mom was like, it's 15. Why are you 30 pounds?
Yeah, she goes, it's a freshman 15, not 30.
Where'd you go to college?
I did my undergrad at UC Riverside.
At Riverside.
But she said it was they had meal passes?
Yeah.
I could eat as much as I want, as many times as I want, because it was buffet style. And I was like, this is amazing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I just grabbed cookies on my way out.
She extracted her tuition back tenfold through the buffet.
It's amazing. Yeah, they used to have buffets in Vegas that were insane. I don't do those as much. We do for Mother's Day. We always go to the Four Seasons in Santa Barbara where it's, you know, ridiculously decadent. But you can't eat that much food. At least
no.
I can't anymore. You know, I used to. But
no. I'm the same way now where it's like even when we do the show, I'll eat. Because we cover three dishes on the show.
Right.
And so I do a taste test of the two and then the ginormous one we reveal and then I eat it. I eat some of it, mm-hmm. and then we share it with the other people in the restaurant. But, like, you got to think, all that happens between 8 a.m. and 11 a.m.
Yep.
So I'm eating half a, like, for the one in Vegas, I ate, like, half a brisket grilled cheese. And then I ate half of the other dish, which was, like, a pasta or something.
At 9:30 in the morning.
And then I'm eating, like, part of the burger, which is this giant burger. And it's, like, so by 11 in the morning, and I'm not a breakfast guy. Like, usually if I get up, I'll go to the gym, and then I'll eat breakfast at, like, noon.
Excuse me. You go to the gym?
Yes, I do. I know it doesn't show, but if I didn't, I wouldn't fit in this chair. And this chair has no sides on it, to give the listeners context. Yeah, it would be way worse if I didn't go to the gym. I haven't been in 2 weeks, but...
It's hard, man, when you're on the road.
Yeah,
you want to get up early, but you just can't.
Well, also, too, like, I was getting frustrated in our last one because just for convenience sake, they would have my call time the same as everybody else's. But then I'm getting there and I'm waiting for setup for an hour and I'm like, that was the gym.
That was right.
I could have went to the gym.
Could have gone.
So they got better with that as we went on. But you know, I'm always hesitant to even say things like that because you don't want to get the reputation of the diva host.
I know, it's tough.
It's like, you know, so I'm like, I try to be so go with the flow sometimes where she's like, you should probably say something about the call time and you could go to the gym. But it's one of those things of like, oh no. It's like, I go, hey, is there any way we could get the call time pushed back? I go, next thing you know, TMZ comes out. Josh Denny refuses to show up before 11 a.m.
You know, around here, TMZ is always lurking. Yeah. And they get me all the time. So the last time, the guy stopped me, and he had the camera, and he said to me, hey, you know, tell me about Double Dare and the physical challenge. I said, do you want to do a physical challenge? He goes, yeah. So we were out in front of Nate Nails, and I said, stay right here. And I went into Nate Nails, and you see I have a little bit of a relationship in there, and I said, give me a paper plate, put as much whipped cream on it as you possibly can.
Oh, yeah.
And they did. And I took the camera away from the TMZ guy and had him pie himself.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
It was fantastic.
That had to be a blast.
It was. It was amazing. They're always lurking because over here you have Bouchon, and then you have Wolfgang Puck's place over there, and then there's the other steak place that I can't think of the name of over here. And so they're always, you know, at night lurking around.
Yeah.
And I was literally going to the drugstore.
You tell them they've got the messenger bag that has a C300 build-out inside of it. It's just like the only guy with a 70-foot messenger bag. Just
so true.
Very inconspicuous.
Yeah, you would have never noticed it in a million years.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. When I worked for Crocs, I had stores. I had kiosk at the Grove.
Yes.
And I had a store at the 3rd Street Promenade.
Yep.
And they used to come in and offer my people money to tip them off when people were there.
Seriously.
And my people, they were good. They never did it, like, to my knowledge, anyway.
Well, other than Mario Batali, who are they going to tip off?
Yeah, you know? Right. No, we used to... One day when I was there working, Al Pacino came in and
really?
Bush. Yeah, he was a big Crocs guy when they first came
no
out.
No kidding.
I don't know about now.
Ooh-ha.
There was a Time magazine cover when he went back to Broadway to do Merchant of Venice.
Right.
Where he's sitting on a park New York park bench in like a $10,000 Armani suit
with Crocs.
With Crocs on.
Oh my god.
With maroon Crocs. They were
I
maroon
used to wear
or khaki.
Them, they're uncomfortable.
Yeah, I used to wear them all the time because I had to.
Yeah.
I still have pairs that I wear, but, you know, like most brands, the story was supposed to be about comfort and not about the goofiness of it, and they didn't really tell that story fast enough. And
I don't think so. You know, marketing is key to so many different things. Years ago, I got called from what became Sirius Satellite Radio, and I had a meeting, and I said, how are you going to market this thing? And they said, you can get the same radio station from Portland, Maine to Portland, Oregon. And I said, unless I'm a trucker, why do I really care about that?
Yeah.
And I said, why don't you get a big name to go on, you know, at the time, Regis and Kathy Lee and, you know, Today Show and stuff, and plug the hell out of the thing. I said, certainly not me, but you need a big name. I'm not saying they got the idea from me, but certainly Howard Stern was the guy who took terrestrial radio and turned it into satellite radio, and it became gigantic. Because people didn't even understand what it was. It's sort of like when cable first came out. Nobody got it, you know? I'm going to pay how much, and what am I going to see, and why am I doing this? So it takes a while to indoctrinate the public, but once they figure it out, there we are back at the India. That's the same guy, isn't it?
No, it's a different bike.
Different?
That's a Harley, by the way.
Oh, is it really?
Those are supposed to sound like that.
Yeah. Yeah,
not through Ducatis.
How do you know the difference between these things?
I can tell. I grew up on them, so
is
I can
really?
Tell the difference in the sound. My mom's whole side of the family. This is a fun story.
Yeah.
So we're filming in Tucson, and my uncle from my mom's side of the family shows up. Now, if I tell you, picture a guy who has the build of a skeleton, who's a lifetime outlaw biker. Ooh. What you picture in your head is exactly who this uncle is.
Yeah.
So he just shows up. And immediately, everyone on the crew is like, who's that? And I go, that's my uncle on my mom's side. They go, oh, we're definitely interviewing him.
And?
So, oh, they absolutely did. They, like, got the camera in front of him. They're just letting him go. And
it was good?
I don't know. Probably will never make it in the episode because it's too fun. But it was one of those things of, like, worlds colliding. And, you know, my my director, David, was like, so, like, how close are you with that side of the family? And I was like, as not close as you can be.
Yeah.
But I said... But I go, they're authentic. They're real people, man. So, yeah, my mom's side, they grew up riding motorcycles. And when I would visit her in the summers, we would go out on the motorcycles. And so most, you know, I haven't really kept track of it over the last 10 years. But for the most part, I could tell you what make and model almost every motorcycle
oh my God,
is from,
you're one
like,
of those
from
guys,
the street.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, because I just got into magazines and, you know, and I love that movie, Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man with Mickey Rourke. And so I just got into it. Like, I was like 13 at the time, and I would just go through these magazines, and I would like quiz myself on you know, what was what. I'm that way now with, like, I get that way, like, weirdly obsessive with strange things. I'm that way with, like, cooking knives, like chef's knives.
Really?
So I could tell you what brand a chef's knife is by the shape of the hilt, the handle. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. And I'm not a chef. But I'm just like, oh, that's ceramic. That's made by this company. Like, there's just some things that I get, like, encyclopedic about where I just, if for whatever reason, I retain it and it stays with me and it's, for whatever reason, interesting enough to be thorough with. That's microphones, crazy. It's the same thing.
Yeah, like, I used to have a microphone fetish. I used to collect them. Very weird. Best part about being on Food Network?
Oh, what, is collecting things?
No, what is for you, I'm asking?
Oh, the treatment you get from restaurants.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
It's just started.
Oh, wait, you
but
wait.
We went to a place and we were like in line and the chef, he had invited us a few times and he goes, you don't wait in line. You guys go sit down.
Yeah.
And then he gave us a tour of the place and he goes, go sit down. Comes out with a tray of everything he serves.
Which is why I started getting weight. Alton Brown wrote a whole article about being on Food Network and you get free food that you don't really want.
Right.
But you feel obligated to eat it. And so, you know, Joe Stone Crab's probably the most successful restaurant in the country down in Miami.
Yeah.
I walked in there once, the first time I noticed this, early in my Food Network career, and there was a line around the block. And I went up to the guy at the desk, and I said, how long a wait, sir? And he goes, for you? Not at all. Come right in.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
That's happened twice now, and I'm trying to remember the other place. At one of the restaurants in a casino.
Nice.
We went in and just, we were talking with the chef about what I do, and he's just like, your crew's coming back this week? I go, yeah, we'll probably all come here and eat again. He goes, this one's on us. Just slid the bill. He's like, it's taken care of.
Really?
Yeah, and it was like, we weren't cheap. We spent like $150 there.
Isn't that nice?
And, but it was nice. And I did feel good. We went back and ate there again with the whole crew. Production paid for that one, and it was bigger. So it worked out well for them, too.
It's always nice. I try to sneak into a Bobby Flay restaurant because Bobby tends to be very, 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 very kind. And the other night, I was in New York and was there, and I get a text. I understand you're eating in my restaurant. It's like, how do you know?
Yeah, he goes, so
that's
crazy.
How I know. That's my gig. That's how I know.
Yeah.
And so he's always been very, very generous. Mario Batali, very generous. All these guys have been very, very cool throughout the years.
Yeah, I'm still in the stares but not acknowledgement phase where I'll catch people like doing this, but I don't get a lot of people coming up to me.
You will.
Yeah.
We were at a restaurant.
You're talking about Brio?
We were sitting down and literally just a few feet away, a couple were talking about him. The way it was
we were seated like you and I are. Her whole family and them are here. There's a partition, like a wall, into another dining area. And there's a couple seated at a two-seater next to us. So he must have recognized who I was. And his way of, instead of just going, oh, hey, you're on that, he goes, I hear him whisper to his wife about me being on a Food Network show. And then he sits back and he just starts like, as if he's talking to himself, pitching ideas for Food Network. Yes.
So that
he's like, you know what would be great on Food Network is if they did a show that was, and he's like, side-eyeing me, and I'm just like, really?
Did you finally say something?
No, I said nothing to him. I was just like, is this really?
Obnoxious.
It was just like, is this really happening?
People are so strange.
It was just weird. I was just like, at that point, why don't you just go, hey, man, like.
Yeah, like what you do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. It's like that thing where it's like they're too, and I'm sure you've gotten this a ton of times, like people who you know are recognizing you, but they try to play it cool.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And it's just like, that ends up being more rude than just going, aren't you Mark Summers?
I hate when they stare.
Yes.
I was at a restaurant the other day, and the lady just, and it's like, for the love of God, just say something.
And that's when you push the button, and it goes, and they get slimed.
That would be nice.